Welcome to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Hartley. This podcast exists to equip and inspire your heart-centered leadership. Every week, we bring interviews with some of the greatest heart sets and mindsets on the planet. I hope the heartprint of our time spent together is that it creates new possibilities for you and all those you come into contact with. If you'd like to explore what we could make possible for you, then head to abty.co.uk/connect and book in a free 30-minute call to begin our journey. On episode 253, I'm joined by Barbara J. Hunt, forgiveness specialist, thought leader. She is a personal and spiritual development mentor, an inspirational speaker, a heartfelt musician, a quirky poet, and the author of Forgiveness Made Easy, the revolutionary guide to moving beyond your past and truly letting go. Barbara believes forgiveness is the new mindfulness, and if you want to create more peace in your own heart and peace in the world, she believes forgiveness is the most powerful practice there is. You get to hear all about the art and the practice of forgiveness in this episode. It's episode 253 with Barbara J. Hunt. Barbara, welcome to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Great to meet you.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I think one of the things I've heard you speak about before about your work is that it really is the work of the heart. And that's what we're all about here at Always Better Than Yesterday. It's about creating heart-centered leadership. And I'm really looking forward to our audience hearing some practices and things that they can bring into their heart-centric leadership, because there's some real transformative power when we tap into some of the things that we're going to talk about.
For sure. And we talk about mental health, but what we really mean is mental and emotional health. And we got to talk about the heart. It's not just the head.
I'm quite antagonistic in my spirit. A bit like Jesus flips a few tables, right? I've got that spirit where, you know, the world puts mind on a pedestal, and there's this well-known app called Headspace. And everyone's raving about Headspace. And I get it. It's really useful. Meditation is a practice. But I playfully wrote that Headspace is a result of heart connection.
Right on. I love it. I love it. It's true.
Yeah. Why? How does one get into the world of forgiveness being your life's expression of your work? Like, how does it become such a thing on your heart to bring that power to other people?
Yeah, it is a kind of curious thing to have such a passion about. And partly, a bit like you, I'm kind of counterculture in that I'm really curious about what's our potential as human beings. And I've, ever since reading Jonathan Livingston's Seagull when I was about 15, I was asking really deep questions about life. You know, why are we here? What's it all for? How can we do it better? And really just seeing, I don't know why, that most of it looks like we could do it better, quite a lot better, and yet we don't. So my journey really with forgiveness, I mean, one of the things that happened that was significant was I did some very brilliant personal development trainings about 30 years ago called the More to Life Program. It's called the Life Training back in the day, but it's now called the More to Life Program. And it was experiential learning. So before the internet, you got in a room with a load of people, a bit like Landmark or something like that, and you did some personal development work. And one of the themes was about forgiveness. And I took it on as a practice. The vision of one of the founders was that practices like, I mean, he didn't call it mindfulness, but he was ahead of his time. Mindfulness, understanding about your monkey mind, being able to do the kind of thing that we now call CBT, all of those sort of inner personal and spiritual development techniques they were teaching tools, and I was a massive fan. I trained with them to teach their self-esteem course and their purpose course, but I stayed really interested in the forgiveness part because it had been kind of revelatory to me, because they gave us the opportunity to think about all the people we need to forgive in our lives, and I thought, well, probably everybody I've ever met, probably. I lowered my bar, started my list, got to number 36 and thought, probably resent my mum as well, and put her name down. And my epiphany about my mum was I was resenting her for having been ill. She had multiple sclerosis from the time I was 15. And by the time I was 18, she was in a wheelchair. 20, I took a year off university to look after her and my brother and my dad. You know, so it had such a massive effect And you wouldn't normally, if you're, you know, trying to come across as a nice human being, you're not necessarily going to admit that you resent somebody for being ill, something that's not their fault. But for me, that was a really powerful teaching, which then meant I was able to meet other people, and it kind of encouraged them to also be honest about what we resent. So, and then fast forward to sort of 2015-ish, and I had the great joy of working on a retreat. So we were doing detox. It was called Vital Detox back in the day. And it was a combination of juice fasting and really deep emotional work. And I was, again, fascinated to see why some people seem to kind of be able to do forgiveness work and other people really challenged by it. Then I wrote my book out of that experience, like, why is it so hard? And so I really did some research and a lot of reading and lots of experiential practice with people. What helps them to forgive? What does it take? Because there's lots of general, well, forgiveness is a good thing, apart from don't let somebody get one over on you, which isn't forgiveness. But then there's like, what? Yeah, but how? And even the teachings from the Mortal Life program, I'm like, good, but and then other things like the journey and like NLP and like so I brought together all of my interest into what I hope is a really useful, accessible practice of forgiveness. And so my job now, I mean, I am a musician as well, so I do have that sort of other expression, but but like the other wing of what I do is all around heart work and forgiveness. If you have a spiritual practice, like forgiveness is the master spiritual practice because it's the hardest, you know, being there and having a, you know, like a mind that's available to consciousness is one thing, having a heart that's available to the people who did the things that you didn't want them to do or didn't do the things that you wanted to do, that's hard. And then also if you don't have a spiritual practice, it's a master mental and emotional ethics, you know, secular ethics practice.
Yeah, there's so much I want to dive into, particularly around the energetics of it and the manifestations, particularly around like you know, the work of David Hawkins talking about like frequencies and how much of it's about letting go. And so I want to get to those bits, but for the real people that maybe this might be an introduction of facing this idea of forgiveness, because some of, particularly with the, you know, the Bible, and it's that almost like moral obligation, moral duty. And I've come to look at that book completely different. Before faith, I was stubborn. I was like, I don't want to be told what to do. Whereas now I realize the wisdom in Jesus' teachings, because life becomes more healthier, both within me and around me, once I embody some of the things he says, right? So I understand that it's not a, you must do this. There's something more to it. But why do you think really that there's this barrier to forgiveness? I know even if we mention the word, like, some people will, toes will curl, like, oh, I can't do that. Why do I have to do that? Maybe we'll start with what forgiveness isn't. Sometimes to clarify what things are, we have to first eliminate what it isn't.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And also, let's do what it isn't. But I also want to give the definition that I use in the book, because that's also really helpful. But the isn't is really helpful. It's not condoning unacceptable behavior. It's not saying it's okay. Yeah. It's not accepting someone's, you know, behavior and not setting a boundary. You can forgive somebody and still divorce and still take them to court if necessary. You don't have to hate people as you do these things. And it's an inner posture. Forgiveness is not for the other person. You don't have to wait to see if they're going to apologize, because you could be waiting forever. Self-forgiveness, you don't have to forgive yourself first in order to forgive somebody else. Otherwise, again, we'll be waiting forever. Forgiveness is not an excuse for somebody else's behavior either, or lack of forgiveness is not a way of justifying your dodgy behavior, because we can use it in that way. And we can talk a bit more about all the uses of resentment and how we use it. Because I don't talk about unforgiveness, because I talk about it the way it is, because actually it's resentment, grievances, ill will. It's you are harboring something else. Wishing it was different is the kind of mildest version, but the way up to anger, well, rage.
And this is what Buddha says, is our not accepting things for the way things are. I'm sure he didn't say it like that, but, you know, West Country speak. That's the breed of suffering. It's wishing things were in any way as they were. And you know, the work of David Hawkins, when he says, you know, the greatest sin is ignorance. And Jesus on the cross says his almost final words were, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." Which is like, there's something so symbolic about forgiveness, which isn't about the way that we wish it would be. It's something, and I think you described this wonderfully, which is about an inner state, an inner spirit.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll share the definition that I use that comes from
Please.
the original teaching that I had with K. Bradford Brown, who was an Episcopal minister, and him and his fellow minister, W. Roy Whitton, were really curious about, yes, but how? You know, we're teaching all this and, you know, we're preaching, but somehow the congregation aren't practicing what we're preaching. And, you know, and so they were really interested in the how. And so Brad said, forgiveness is the absolute refusal to hold ill will against someone for what they did or didn't do. I'll say it again because it's quite long. Forgiveness is the absolute refusal to hold ill will against someone for what they did or didn't do. And I kind of describe it a bit like this, where we've got all our kind of little grievances and our grudges and our gripes and our stuff for that person who did that thing, and then they did that other thing, and then we've got this is what we carry around in our hearts most of the time, and usually without noticing. That's the other thing. If you were saying, Barbara, you're carrying quite a lot of resentment, I'm going, I don't see it. You look perfectly fine to me, but I'm not speaking to that person. But that's okay.
And
You know.
then you're going to make a decision in this moment about the state of what you're carrying, even though you don't realize.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so the absolute refusal to hold the ill will.
Yes. Freedom.
That's my choice. And you're talking about frequencies. You can feel the difference energetically of when I am choosing to not hold it. Because it doesn't matter what you do. I can keep taking this on board because it's my heart I'm keeping it in. Or I can say, I refuse to hold my ill will against you, and I don't want to see you anymore. And I'm going to take you to court. And you know, like there's it's not forgiveness is does not exclude setting clear boundaries.
And one of the things that, you know, I've been very fortunate enough to interview the likes of Dr. Bruce Lipton, Chris Walk, who's a cancer survivor. You know, a lot of the conversations we've had on the podcast is around the energy of sickness, the energy of sickness and the physical manifestations of emotions, you know. And I think this is a really important thing for people to hear if they haven't heard it before. I was in the butcher's the other day, the most random place ever, right? And the guy was telling me, he's got issues with his liver, and you know, he's got particular issues, and he looked at me, and obviously I was just a hippie with the long hair in the butcher's. I said, "Mate, have you thought, you know, have you thought about the emotional strain that's been on?" He said, "Yeah, he lost a brother. I've been grieving hard for a year, lost my brother." I said, "Okay, dude," I said, "before you get treated like a drug dispenser," I said, "explore that. Go and do some research. Go and read other people's testimonies and accounts where they've had, you know, issues within their body as a result of a manifestation of grief and suffering. And just open up the possibility that there may be something else going on rather than just a failing of your organs, shall we say."
Wow, how wonderful that he ran into you. I'd love to pick up on that because I host online practice spaces, like a dojo for the heart, where we're not doing yoga, we're doing the inner origami of the heart. And the last one I did was on grief and forgiveness, because I've also just lost my brother. And I often talk about grief and forgiveness being like siblings because they often come together. We often find it hard to grieve because there's something we haven't forgiven the other or ourselves for. Or also, we find it hard to forgive because we haven't grieved. Or if in the process of forgiving, that opens the heart up. Because what happens with holding our resentment, it kind of protects the heart. It feels like whatever it is, it's like an incrustation, like a scab or something. When something's just, you know, it's just after something's happened, is not the time to go, you're going to forgive that person, you know, when they just betrayed you. You need time to turn within and to feel your feelings and to be honest about what happened. And there is a kind of timing to it. Even though I maintain that anyone can forgive anything, they'd need coaching, support, and there's a timing to it. There is a sort of flow where you just realize, I don't want to live with an encrusted heart anymore. But in the process of opening it and allowing your heart to be vulnerable, you may realize that there's a lot to be grieved. Yeah. And that's one of the other reasons why we find it so hard to forgive, is we don't want to feel our feelings.
No. And it's a real testament to the fact that this is heart work, because if it was the work of the mind, then there'd be an algorithm that says they were 72% a good person, and on this 12% of this bad day, they've made this particular thing, which these situations and these circumstances. So the algorithm says forgiveness. I've statistically worked out their humanity. They were 100% flawed. Therefore, result equals forgiveness. It's not that, is it? And you know, I think the understanding, the compassion, you know, particularly when it comes to issues of parenting, particularly for me, I had very young parents, you know, 20 and 19 when I was born, and my two parents couldn't keep together and they separated. And naturally, there are some consequences to my young heart, right? But when I sit back and go, they were kids. They were kids. They didn't know any better. They couldn't do any better. Yeah. Not to say that they made terrible mistakes, but there were consequences, right? Yeah. And you say, okay, so compassion is part of it, having an empathy, but there's still a choice. I could still hold on to that and go, oh, well, you still hurt me. It still had consequences.
Yeah.
Well, I still have to do something around, okay, now I understand it. Can I let it go?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the hardest thing. When they first talked about it on the More to Life program weekend, they talked about a monkey, how you trap a monkey. You put like a little sweetmeat in a coconut or a gourd, and they put their hand in, and when they're holding on to the sweetmeat, they will not let it go. So they could let go and then go free, but that's actually how you catch one, because they won't let go of the sweet. And that's kind of what we do. In our hearts, it's like we can't quite let go of the injustice. And we even, like, if you think of it a bit like a pair of scales, we have this inner sense of, well, this is right. And if that happens, then I need to make that happen to kind of make it. And we even talk about get even. We're trying to balance things up, the injustice. And so the idea of letting go, that everything in us that has that kind of social awareness, our monkey minds, are going, because we want it to be fair, and it isn't. And so then how do you adjust yourself to take in, and this is where it's work of the heart, this embrace of, my parents were young, they didn't meet all my needs, and I've got things that need to be grieved. And sometimes people say, oh, my parents, you know, they were great, I got over it, you know, I understand, they were doing the best. But then there's this kind of like little you in there going, and that's part of the work of the forgiveness in the way I do it, is actually embracing those parts of you that weren't met, and acknowledging and admitting. For me, it's shadow work, really admitting, I'm holding resentment, I'm judging you, I'm really judging you. You know, like with my mum, part of my forgiveness process was I resented her for wearing pop socks. That's nothing to do with her. That's my fashion sense when I'm 20 something. You know, it's, you know, it's all really the inner work is about being honest with ourselves about those games that we play, and choosing to take, you know, a bigger perspective that embraces the reality.
And being around the right people, right? Because if I'm like having a chat with you going, yeah, you're absolutely right to resent the pop socks.
Yeah.
She better not be wearing Crocs as well. Like, you're like, I didn't even know that. Oh my God.
exactly. And that's another really good point though, Ryan, because I think we do sometimes feed each other's resentments. Right. Yeah, you know, we kind of do that, you know, my childhood was worse than your childhood, sort of competitive, you know, how awful my parents were. But
it's a projection of values. I'm projecting onto you. You should feel like this.
Yeah. And think about culturally. Yeah. All of the movies that are based on resentment, you know, all the big movies like Star Wars, Harry Potter, you know, where the young person has to somehow get revenge. And I'm not saying that they're not great movies or stories, but just culturally, how few stories. There are some movies about forgiveness, but you're not rushing or queuing around the corner to go and see those ones. You know, you might watch them on a sort of like quiet Sunday, but they're not blockbusting in the same way as somehow justice being served to the
retribution.
Bad person.
Well, it's Batman all over, right? It's the Dark Knight. It's the retribution.
Yeah.
Right the wrongs.
Yeah. And then we wonder why we have a world that is perpetually at war. And right. for me, that was the other thing that was so compelling about forgiveness, because as I was writing my book, I was thinking, well, you know, we could have a sort of a period of maybe another lockdown, a forgiveness lockdown, where everyone does their forgiveness work and forgives everybody that they need to forgive. And then in 2 weeks, you could potentially have a world at peace. If I'm right, and what I'm saying is you're holding ill will as a choice, and you could choose to let it go if you're given the right guidance, we could potentially in a couple of weeks have a world at peace. So then you get the really interesting question, why aren't we doing it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to interview Richard Rudd a couple of months ago. He's the author of Gene Keys, and one of the favorite clips that the audience kind of loved from that conversation was that, you know, there's war in the world because we're a war within ourselves, which is exactly what you've just said, right? And one of the things he was talking about, and it's funny how you just talked about the shadow, is that it's about integration. It's not about repression. It's not about denying and cutting off. It's about, can I accept the darkness within you because I've come face to face with the darkness within me? And that's been one of the wonderful side effects that I didn't anticipate with my journey, particularly inward, is the amount of self-compassion, the amount of forgiveness that I didn't even know I needed, right? But as I've become an integrated human being, I've made space for the light, the dark, the good, the bad, the indifferent, the gifts, the skills, the talents, the flaws, the weaknesses, the failed, you know, infallible. And I come face to face with my weaknesses in such a greater detail that I love myself more. It's a paradox, right? It's like the more I look at my shortcomings, the more beauty I see. And it's just like, I think if everybody started to do that, really started to, rather than repress and get rid of, or only, you know, culture likes us to only put our best foot forward, right? Social media highlight reels or performing for whatever it is that we're going to our day jobs for. If we learn to put both feet forward, then maybe all of us will be accepted. We won't need to attack the darkness we see in other people.
Yeah, well, we won't need to project it onto other people if you're owning it in yourself and saying, yes, there, but for the grace of God, go I. If you know the depths to which you will stoop, you can be gracious about the depths, you know, when other people stoop a little, you know, and be generous. And I do think that one of my thrills about talking with people like you on podcasts is that I think forgiveness is something we need to be talking about culturally now. We've been talking about mindfulness, that's sort of in the zeitgeist. Mental health is in the zeitgeist, but like we said at the very beginning, we need to make it mental and emotional well-being and to take into account the power. I mean, how can you possibly separate out the blood that's going around your system that has cortisol in it because you hate your mother, as opposed to just, oh, well, you know, maybe you need to have like blood pressure tablets to reduce your cortisol levels or whatever, you know, not cortisol, but you know.
Madness. Yeah. Well, yeah, without being too conspiratorial, then we'd have to change the business model of how money is made. But
let's do that.
One of the things that I find really interesting is the epistemology of words, right? The real breaking down the little bits of the word. And I go to Google for forgiveness, and I'm really not satisfied. So I'm really glad that you brought your own definition. I'd love to know the bit around give, to forgive. Like, what is it that we are giving?
That's a lovely question, actually. I think what we're giving is, you know, and if you see it as like forgiving, we're kind of giving somebody the benefit of the doubt, like before they've earned it, before they've apologized, before they've had the epiphany and, you know, given us all their money or whatever it is, you know, it's like a generosity of heart. And also we're giving back to ourselves the freedom of a free heart. I mean, you know, an empty, not an empty heart in a bad way, but just like a heart that isn't tangled up with resentment and wishing things were different. It frees you from the past. And so that is probably one of the greatest gifts you could give yourself and other people. Yeah. And back to the etymology, though, because I love that too. When I talk about resentment, because resentment comes from sentia, to feel. So resent is you feel it again. You're feeling those feelings again and again, which again is why, you know, we don't realize that it's damaging us in any way. And there's a few lovely sayings about resentment. One is resentment and resenting somebody is like taking poison and hoping the other person will die. Or my particular favorite is holding onto resentment is like setting yourself on fire and hoping the other person will be bothered by the smoke. I like that more because it has a sense of
dramatic,
like, they're not even in the room. And also rage, you know, sort of rage is an unquenchable fire and you are the fuel.
Right.
You're the one who's being burnt up. Because if you think about it, I mean, in some ways it is, without being disrespectful to the trauma in the world, but when we hold on to our resentment, like I'm holding on to it, and I'm holding on to it really hard, nothing's different. Really, really hard, because they were so wrong.
Yes.
Nothing's different. You know, it's kind of like, it's kind of pointless.
Yes.
Except you're feeding something internally, which is your sense of injustice and righteousness for a correction. But apart from that, in terms of the effect on the world, nada.
Well, and if I'm saying to you, you are absolutely right to hold on to that. Like, oh man, I kind of, if you're getting sympathy, if you're getting all the feels, like the attention, the love, the sympathy, again, nothing changes. But what it teaches us subconsciously is that I get what I want or need through me being a victim of this stuff. And it just, it'll keep us stuck, right? It's like an addiction.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the, because in my book, I talk about five different obstacles to forgiveness.
Yes.
And one of them is this exploration about what do you get out of holding the resentment, because we surely do. So one of them we've already talked about, which is this sense of protection. But what you've talked about is the more complex and egoic parts of the moral high ground, playing out a victim or a martyr drama, saying, well, I didn't leave him, you know, because of what he did, as opposed to I'm taking back my power and choosing to do something different. You know, so you're disempowering yourself, you're making excuses for your behavior, you're justifying dodgy behavior. You know, I always steal the stationery from work because my boss is an idiot. You know, it's kind of like we use a resentment in many different ways. But the flip side of that is when you look at those apparent payoffs, they're really costs. What's the downside of always being a victim? The downside of having a protected heart? The downside of blaming other people and not feeling like you're in charge of your life? The downside of, you know, having resentment? You know, you go to bed with that person, you grind your teeth in the night, you wake up with that person, you know, it costs you in your health, in your freedom, in your intimacy. You know, if you've got this, you're carrying resentment around, because it's not pretty. Sometimes we can get off on it a bit, but you must have friends. You know, everyone has friends who bitch about their parent, usually their mother. I mean, we used to have to say this on the retreat, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. Everyone needs to do forgiveness work on their parents, you know. And then from my point of view, you keep a list. So maybe this is kind of going on to what you're saying about what could people do. Start being honest with yourself. Keep a list in the back of your journal of who am I resenting at the moment? And it can be my work now, more obviously having lived this for decades, is more about who in the government, who on the world stage, you know, who are the people who are doing the things that I'm judging and resenting? They're not really in my life in the way that, you know, some people, you know, you need to do your historical work, but I'm still resenting.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the invitation is to do a check-in and take an inventory, not to, again, chop it off and hide it, but to address it, to come face to face with it. And, you know, there's okay to have an injustice with the way that the world's going, but for us to deal with it with love rather than fear, we have to transform that energy into love and action rather than fear, hate, rage, like you said. It's allowing that to reveal to us what's important, why it's there, not judge it, and transform it.
Yeah. And also, for some people on your list, you might need a bit of a long run up. There may be a few you can just, I can do my work on that person. Yeah, I can do that. That's, you know, as a practice. And that's why I talk about it as a practice. Like yoga. You don't go, I've done yoga. you know, or you, I've done meditation, you know, you keep doing the practice. And it's the same with forgiveness. You keep doing the practice. And like, even in the circumstances of my brother's death, I was doing forgiveness work on the other people who were around him, who weren't doing the things that I thought they should be doing or behaving in the ways I wanted them to behave. You know, so that's the power of having a practice, so that at the moment of his death, my field was clear of resentment, because that was my choice, to be fully present without having any resentment to any person who was in that room. You know, and that's powerful.
You've used the metaphor of a field. I know that that's deeper in your work. Talk to me about the metaphor of the field.
Yeah, I love it. Well, it's kind of back to what you were saying about the different resonances, the different energetic qualities, because Charles Eisenstein talks about every time we forgive, it adds to the forgiveness field. He actually uses those words, which is what I stole for using my group work. But also that really beautiful Rumi poem that says, out beyond ideas of right doing and wrongdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. And I really love that, because this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to transcend that you did this, you didn't do that, and get into the field where, what else is possible? What else can I see? Can I see with compassion? You know, my parents probably were trying to do the best they could. And I think if you look on the back of the ingredient packet of any human being, you go, oh yeah, that happened when they were three. They make sense. You know, so we have this, again, this compassionate approach. And it doesn't mean that you let people who are in positions of power get away with things that they shouldn't be getting away with, or anybody, not necessarily people in positions of power. We need to call, you know, unacceptable behavior. But I don't ever think that there's anything that's unforgivable, because if you say it's unforgivable, where do you go?
Yeah, and what do we gain by not forgiving? Because like you said, the forgiveness is more about the past, isn't it? Letting go of the past so that my future may be more free. And there's something that happened to me tail end of last year. I understand the behavior, where it came from. I've forgiven a certain individual for the behavior. I don't want to see him again. Yeah. I don't want to share space and time with them again. Yeah. But both things can be possible at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I think one of the other, what forgiveness isn't, it isn't reconciling. I think that's another thing that people are afraid of. If I forgive my ex, do I have to, you know, remarry them or whatever? It's not reconciling.
It's
a reconciliation inside yourself.
It's almost like the fear of coming back to the village, having come down off your pedestal. It's like, I'm back amongst it. Don't put yourself there, because you're not going to come. It's all kind of an illusion that we're putting, isn't it? But some of the things that you talk about, habits and practices, I'd love to know a couple of them that you know people might start to entertain. I've certainly heard the ones around, you know, visualizing, having it in your hands, turning your hands over, and kind of, there's something about doing something symbolic, whether it be writing and burning, hands letting go. Like, what's the importance of having a practice that allows this both mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually to move?
I mean it's probably the most important work you can do, inner work, because it's the work of the heart. And if you want your heart open and available, I mean, it means that your heart's tender. You know, I think a lot of the time we think, well, I don't really want to feel everything because I might cry or I might, but that it's like the guides on your paper, you know, on your printer. You can't just open one side, they happen together. So either you live with your heart open and you experience the feelings, and that's not easy. Or you live with a little walnut of a heart that's, you know, shriveled up and not available. So in terms of practices, just thinking about forgiveness as a mental and emotional thing that you can do or have on your radar, because also just think about the number of relationships that are challenged because of unexpressed resentment, and there are ways of dealing with resentment that's graceful and tolerable. Because if I come to you and I go, look, Ryan, there's all this, look, there's that, as opposed to I've done my forgiveness work for myself and then I'm going, oh, can we have a conversation later on this week? And it's just so much easier for you to hear that, because that's a need that's not being met, or something that I forgot to say, that I really hate pop socks and could we go shopping together, you know, like something that's, you know, it's a bit trivial, but something that's important.
Oh, but mother, I'm deeply offended by your socks, and it's, you know what, my friend is coming around and he doesn't like odd socks either, so you better not make sure that
Exactly. But it's more really just you getting clear, and this part, this emptying out, can happen in the privacy of your own space. So I sometimes do forgiveness work when I'm driving, because I can speak out loud, especially if I'm on my own. I can speak out loud and have a conversation and kind of clear up things. And I even did it one time when I was on my way to meet a friend on a bus, actually, and I didn't do it out loud. I did it in my head. But my experience shows that the best way of doing it is if you speak it out loud.
Yes.
In an imaginary conversation, like a gestalt kind of arrangement, where you speak to the other person. And that's what my 7-step forgiveness made easy process is. It's a conglomeration of the different techniques where you have you're visualizing having the conversation that you'd always wanted to have had with that person. So you're really honest about the depths of your resentment, but you're also able to apologize for your part, because sometimes, again, with forgiveness, there's the thing that the other person did, and then there's my part in it, where there's maybe things I'm going, oh, actually, I'm really sorry I did that as well. Oh God, yeah. And I know I was difficult there. And then there's the things you need to forgive yourself for as well. So it's like a plat. And we need to make room for all of those different areas. And self-forgiveness, we can talk about slightly separately, because in some ways that has I approach that slightly differently. But, you know, making time for that kind of conversation. So you do it either with a therapist or come to a forgiveness field. I host them online. They're open. Anybody can join, you know, that kind of thing, where it's on your mind. And if you're keeping a list, if you've got a big list, you just work through it. And then as things happen and people piss you off, you add new people on and different things that are happening in the world, and on it goes.
It's real courageous work, isn't it? Because like sometimes people are just so out of practice with expressing purity from, this is what I'm thinking, we're so self-censored in many ways, right? Sometimes that's because what we've learned, that's just what we've, how our coping strategies have, or the person that we're with listens to defend, or they listen to respond. And we're dealing with kind of misfiring, you know, sort of have a container where you're going, in a world without judgment, this is what I'd like you to hear. This is what I'd like you to understand. It's very rare do we get those conversations, because you've got two human beings with unmet needs. There's risks attached to, what does this mean? What does that mean? What are the, am I no longer loved? Like, is my relationship status threatened? And you know, sometimes for my wife and I particularly, we've had the most fruitful conversations in our marriage when we've had to down our tools, when we've had to down the weapons and go, this ain't working. Yeah. We're gonna have to do this slightly differently. We're gonna have to sit and listen because, you know, if we're doing this in the busyness of day, we've all got justifications and reasons and excuses and things to say back to the other person. It takes a true, I guess, field, as you're describing it, an environment that makes some of this possible. But you use the word easy, like, what a sadistic word to use when it comes to forgiveness, right? Why do you have a belief that it could be easy?
Yeah, I actually did want to call the book Made Easier, but my son was saying, no, you need to just go for it, you know, because it does make, you know, if you do the prep work, the actual forgiveness part, if you understand why you've been holding on, if you've done the full extent of your resentment, if you've done the steps, then actually the part where you forgive is the, you want to do that part if you've done the prep, right? But just back to what you were saying about the conversations, because I say you never have the conversation with the person in real time unless you are both enlightened.
Right.
And even then, preferably supervised, because no, like you said, you get defensive. You're going, what? But do you mean, but they're the blue pop socks. I you know, you get really specific about things that you, so when you're doing it on your own in your imagination, you can really be petty. You can say all the things that the other person just doesn't need to hear. They don't need to know that, you know, so that, and that's why you then end up with the being able to have a candid conversation with somebody. Once you've done your forgiveness work, your heart is free for some reason, and it's like it's magic. It changes the dynamic between you. If you do your forgiveness work, and it only has to be unilateral, you do it, and somehow, and this used to happen all the time on retreat, I do a piece of work with somebody, and they, a few days later, they go, you'll never guess what, and I'd say, I might, and they go, my sister texted me and she told me she loved me and she's never told me that, you know, like that kind of thing, because they've done their forgiveness work.
Yeah.
And it is like a miracle. Something shifts, and it's like the other person, maybe, you know, as if we're kind of beings that have sensitivities that are probably not very well developed in us, but there's some kind of level where if someone has laid down their shield over their heart,
right,
somehow you feel more connected. I mean, when I did my process on the bus with my friend, I had the nicest time with her. And she didn't know what I'd done. It was just all about, you know, me and my schoolgirl behavior.
It's madness, isn't it? This is at the quantum level. This is the bits which transcends understanding, because it's not linear, isn't it? Oh, I do this, therefore that. It's understanding that, I think Sadhguru said a phrase that love makes many things possible, because we don't understand it, we just call it miracle. And it's clearly said it more articulate than that, but that's it. There's so much, and for me, God is love, right? That when if I say that love, God, that's the same thing, right? Whether that be the quantum field, whether that be whatever, like however people want to refer to it, I call that God. And I think sometimes some of this is made possible by something far greater than ourselves, and I just wonder how much that plays a part in, you know, transcendence, shall we say.
Yeah, well, I think I try and talk about it as a secular ethics practice, because then it means that everybody can join in. Truly, it's grace. It is, we're talking about unconditional love, the kind that people really want and no one gets. I mean, truly unconditional means no conditions. So that means no matter what you do, just like you talked about Jesus a few times, he was the master spiritual practitioner of forgiveness. How many times should I forgive my brother? 70 times seven. That's not once. That's 70 times seven. That's keep a list. That's every time you plus more.
Yeah.
No exceptions. He didn't go, oh, unless it's a tax or a prostitute. You know, he's like, every time. And even in the moment of his death, like you said, forgive them for they know not what they do. Because that is it. I mean, the ignorance is that you don't really, you know, if you're it's usually our behavior towards other people that's damaging is not conscious. I was at a forgiveness conference in Israel last year that didn't work. It wasn't supposed to work, but they had a couple of people who were going through or had been through the criminal justice system, and they'd been through restorative justice. So yes, they'd had the opportunity to meet each other, the perpetrator and the victim. And the perpetrator said until that meeting, he had no idea there were consequences to his behavior, to his thieving, his burglary and his violence. No idea.
Yeah. Which to the world, you go, well, that's obvious, mate. Well, it wasn't. So you either deal with the fact that it wasn't. So I did 12 years UK police service in a variety of kind of civilian roles. So I'm familiar with the concept of restorative justice. You know, there are so many implications of the word forgiveness, right? When it comes to families, whether it comes to health issues, criminal justice, like where's your heart and passion to see this work, you know, ripple effect and transform communities and homes?
Everywhere. I mean, really everywhere. You know, when people are saying about your brand and who's your ideal audience and who's your target, and I'm like, everyone. Everyone, because we all need to do it. You know, and my belief is there's a really lovely quote from the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and he says, without forgiveness, there really is no future. And I feel like right now, unless we PDQ start doing our forgiveness work, because I can't do anything about everybody else, what I can make sure is in my own heart that I'm as clear a field as I can be. I'm a human being. I resent people. I do my practice just like everyone. Like, you know, like we might want, you know, to eat healthily, and occasionally you have, you know, some bread from the local delicious delicatessen, you know, like when no one's perfect. So in all those places, especially actually in the restorative justice arena, I would love people to know about my work so that they could do that first. So if you're doing the imaginary work first, when you actually have that very confrontational encounter with the person, you're somewhat prepared. Yeah. I think that would be brilliant. All doctor surgeries, and in fact, I'm going to have a conversation with a doctor later this month, next month, about introducing the idea of a forgiveness, like as a mental health practice locally. you know, I mean, relationships, every relationship counselor should know how to guide a forgiveness practice, particularly if there's been infidelity or that, you know, I mean, I can't, schools, offices, you know, anybody who's in commerce who has colleagues, you know, it's kind of like anywhere where there's people that would be where.
I lost someone very dear to me last year, and she would be described as what you would call the last of a true matriarch. She was like head of the family. She knew everybody's business. She kept everybody's secrets. And I think she got to a point where she suffered as a result. She had a cancer journey, and I think that was a downfall. And, you know, I just, without me saying too much about her life, things might be different. New possibilities might have emerged if there was a process of forgiveness, not for anybody else, but for her own health and well-being.
Yeah. And in fact, I've heard recently, which I'm yet to follow up, about the progression of melanoma and forgiveness, and how doing forgiveness work can actually slow down the progression. I mean, that is powerful. And if we're talking about global health and well-being, again, attending to your inner life and doing the forgiveness work that you can do, sometimes, you know, there are things beyond our control. So even if you did your forgiveness work, you still might die of cancer. However, you'll die with a free heart. You know, that is the point. It's like you want to be on your deathbed feeling like there's nothing in there apart from love. That's it.
Yeah. I have a Christian faith journey that I didn't anticipate or expect, but I ended up in a church without faith at this point. Curiosity, but no faith. And it was a Father's Day, and the pastor kind of invited me down the front. Said, oh, we're going to do, you know, say some nice words over you men. It's Father's Day. We're going to do a little commissioning. I was like, oh, all right, what's the worst that can happen? You know, I'm a father. He'll say some nice things. And he just said, that's it, women. If you want to put your hands out towards these men, you do that. And, like, my whole body caught fire. My eyes streamed. And I just walked back to my wife. I was like, I just feel like a child of God. And I don't want to talk about this ever again, right? But the ripple effect of that day for me, I feel like I had healed an abandonment wound of some kind that made forgiveness possible in ways that I wouldn't have intellectually done before that. So that's why I'm curious about the whole bigger than me type question around forgiveness. And I don't want to look at it like passive to say, all right, well, the big man's responsible for everybody's forgiveness. I look at it and think, well, I had to get myself into a posture where I was ready to receive that.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I didn't know that that's what I was going to receive, but I got into a posture where I was at least willing to go to the front. And I received a great gift of forgiveness, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a really good point, because sometimes people do have spontaneous epiphanies about forgiveness, like even after like the most heinous experience, somehow they're able to forgive the perpetrator, even if it's like killed a family member or whatever. And for me, my experience of the forgiveness fields, that is sacred space I'm holding. Sacred things happen. People weep, you know, like they don't even know who I am. And I say, bring tissues, because they're able to, because I was raised as a Catholic, and the sacrament of confession is there for a reason, because you need to dump out all the crap to somebody, or in what's brilliant about Zoom is you can do it with your microphone off, so you can just do it in this, I don't even have to listen. You know, it's like I'm there holding the space and people doing it at the same time. But it's that sense of relieving of the heart of those burdens and doing that afresh. And so to me, it's sacred space, but I don't talk about it like that necessarily unless there's an invitation to, because I don't want to exclude people if they don't have faith. You don't have to have a faith. That's why I call it a secular ethics practice as well. But it is truly the master spiritual practice, because it's the hardest. It's basically saying I'm gonna have unconditional love towards someone who's hurt me, not the ones I love and the ones who are doing the things I want them to do,
without fear of worrying what that makes me look like. It's not having an identity that says, oh, that makes me weak, or that makes me feeble, you know, or what do people think of me. There's a peace that transcends the worry about anything external.
But I love challenging these kind of the assumptions that we have culturally. Because think about people like the Dalai Lama or Nelson Mandela or Martin Luther King. I remember hearing a story about Martin Luther King, and he gets attacked on stage, and he's, you know, hit, you know, he's, you know, falls to the ground, and he says, "Don't hurt him." As they come to collect his perpetrator, don't hurt him. I mean, he was absolutely committed to nonviolence. That is power. That is true power and spiritual greatness, if you like. This, however much I hold onto my resentment, how powerful am I when I have this in my heart, really? Because you can say something and that's just going to add. That's just going to add more. You said that. You know, it's like,
you might even end up throwing one of those things at me.
Exactly. Whereas if I'm choosing, I'm in charge. It's my heart. Yeah, yeah. I'm the one who chooses. I'm free.
Powerful.
Powerful.
I wouldn't be doing my audience who are watching on YouTube any justice if I don't ask you a question about the fire extinguisher over your shoulder. What does that do for you every time you look at that?
Well, it's really funny. It's I love it because it's quite quirky,
yeah,
and it's kind of what the world needs now. I mean, I should really say forgiveness, but again, peace and love. I mean, my commitment is to peace. My global, my vision, I call myself a global visionary, is peace in every heart, one heart at a time. And I'll start anywhere and I'll work with anyone. You know, it's like if you're willing, let's do it. And it is possible. I mean, that's the extraordinary thing. We currently have the technology to do this thing. So as a humanity, we need the willingness. And so anything that's going to draw attention, be quirky, kind of like, and also the other thing that I'm really clear about is we can be quite lighthearted about a very serious subject.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important. I am horribly sincere about my work, but also lighthearted, because we're all idiots. We're all flawed, you know, and we have to keep a bit of a sense of humor about
that's it. That's a wonderful byproduct of this journey, is irony and it's, you know, satire. And you know, I think humor is a frequency raiser, that's for sure, when we learn not to take it too seriously.
Yeah.
Love him or hate him, Russell Brand's very good at that. And, you know, Russell uses comedy like a Trojan horse. And that's kind of what I thought your thing over there, peace and love, is like the Trojan horse to the deeper topic of forgiveness.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I've really enjoyed our conversation. Is there anything about your work that I've not particularly made space for that you're really passionate about sharing? You've got a book. Maybe you can tell our audience about called and where to find it.
It's here. It's available on, unfortunately, large online outlets. And I really genuinely tried to make it easy. So I take through like the five different obstacles. I outline the process. I kind of talk about my vision for what could happen globally. And there's lots of resources as well for other, like you were saying about short things that you can do, like the hand thing, letting go, and then even the Ho'oponopono, which is the, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. Different little things that you can do, but actually, as far as I'm concerned, obviously, because I created it, the practice that I recommend is the best if you want to do a good piece of work. And I do some one-to-ones. I work with individual clients sometimes, but I also, I'm trying to build up the forgiveness fields to just normalize it. Just, you know, once a month on a Sunday, just come do a bit of practice. Don't do the biggest thing, you know, because we're taking a whole group through together. You can't do like your mom or your dad in a one of those practices, but you can do, you know, irritating neighbors or colleagues or whatever, you know, just to practice and see how that goes, you know.
I love that.
That's
one of the words I use here at Always Bitten Yesterday. It's called heart print, and the word symbolizes the ripple effect that we have with our work or with our being when we interact with other human beings. Is the things that we make possible for people, homes, communities, the world. Barbara, I'd love for you to reflect on your life, you know, maybe pre-flect. Just what do you hope your heart print will be?
Ah, oh, that's really beautiful. Well, funnily enough, I have a new album coming out this year as well, which is about, one of them's called Forgive Me. And it's some of it's about the therapeutic process and a couple of reflections. So what I would love with my work really is the opening of the heart, you know, the kind of the softening and the opening. And that, I think that takes courage to be willing to own your shadows and to be vulnerable and to have a tender and open heart. And I really feel this, especially after the death of my brother, the like my heart's been blown open, you know, in a really good way. And just so one of the things I think is really to be medicine for the heart, or to be remedy for the heart in some way.
Thank you for that. It's funny, isn't it? Your heart gets blown open and you can see more color. You can see the beauty in all of this. You know, I like to think that we're all fractal expressions of the divine, right? Everything that is animated by the same source, same spirit. And I think when your heart's blown open, you're just more aware of that. You're more tuned in to the fact that you're part of the bigger I am.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Barbara, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for all the things that you're putting out into the world. And we'd be honored if you'd leave us a final thought from your good self.
Okay. I do tend to say this whenever I can, which is that peace starts in your heart, and global peace will happen one heart at a time. And your forgiveness is an act of amnesty for the whole of humanity.
Beautiful. Barbara, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, thank you for making it to the end. I hope that our time spent together today has left you a little bit better than before you push play. I'd really appreciate if you just took a moment to leave a review to allow me to meet more people where they are and hopefully leave them a little bit better too. If you're curious to know how I, through Always Better Than Yesterday, can serve you, your team, your organization, then head to alwaysbetterthanyesterday.com to connect. And while you're there, let me know one or two things that you're going to do as a result of listening to this conversation. I absolutely love hearing your thoughts, your reflections, and the things that this spark in your own heart and mind. If you want more insights from my heart and mind, I do send out short episodes on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And again, I hope that they serve you well. I appreciate you listening. I'm Ryan Hartley, host of the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast, a podcast for heart-centered leaders just like you. Keep leading, my friends. Always love.